if I was some leader in the health system, right, I wouldn't quite care whether and how much of online appointment booking, video consultations, remote monitoring, digital therapeutics or other stuff you would be using, as long as it's effective. Right. So in that sense, I really hope that we are getting from that notion of let's enable a digital health category like video consultation towards more like let's empower people that they can develop digitally enabled disease management programs for diabetes, back pain, COPD, heart failure, etc. and stitch together whatever they need to get to good patient journeys and workflows that are then helping doctors and healthcare workers spend more time with patients and less time with administration.
Today, we're in Berlin, or rather we were in Berlin, and we took the Bahnhof to the periphery of the city to meet Tobias Silbersan outside a conference he was speaking at. I was very much looking forward to speaking with Tobias again. I met him a year previously in Berlin at a conference on digital orthopedics hosted by my friend David Back, and I was so impressed. Few people I know have as broad a perspective on digital health innovation in Europe as Tobias does. When we met, he was still at McKinsey, leading the healthcare innovation team. In that role, interfaced with startups and health ministers, life science companies, and NGOs. Overall, his experience was global, and he focused on enabling digitally enabled health systems. Not long after we met, chose to leave McKinsey after 15 years. He left behind his demanding travel schedule and refocused that time on his wife and two children who are 7 and 9. While the kids are at school, Tobias has chosen to help the Grameen Foundation, who you may know was founded by Nobel Prize winner Muhammad Yunus, to bring digital health to Bangladesh and elsewhere. He will also return to his basic science roots, having a PhD in immunology, by working with the FH Europe Foundation on lipoprotein disorders. What follows is a brief and concise overview of digital health initiatives in Europe, challenges and opportunities tied to reimbursement, and some considerations about future directions for the EU. Let's begin with a 10,000-foot view of the major initiatives happening across the European Union. And thanks again, Tobias Silbersan, for joining me.
Yeah, very happy to. And great question, because I think there are a lot of things can be learned from each other, and a lot of things could be done together rather than alone. So I'll briefly cover three things. One thing is sort of the European country by country digital transformations of health. So there we usually have digital health strategies per country in Europe, and they often cover then topics like electronic patient records, e-prescriptions, then to some degree different digital health categories such as prescription digital therapeutics or patient remote monitoring or video consultations and topics like that. There, if I just sort of go through the few main categories, the countries in Northern Europe, Scandinavia, they've been ahead on the two foundational enablers of a digitally enabled health system, the electronic patient record, as well as the e-prescription infrastructures. And then countries like Germany and France, they are the more the followers. When we look at countries like Italy, which of course you know much better than me, and Spain, right, they have had e-prescriptions for many years already, whereas Germany just sort of is scaling them this year, right? It became mandatory January 1st, 2024. And in the first 2 months, we got to about 60% of total prescriptions being e-prescriptions, right? And the other 40% will now be closed as more and more pharmacies and physician offices then sort of sort out their technical issues that they had in January. But so there we have various degrees of progress that countries have made towards those two enabling technologies, the electronic patient records and the e-prescriptions. And then there is a wide range of progress when we look at really the patient-related and chronic disease management-related categories.
Let me interrupt for a second. Tobias here makes an excellent point. For digital health to move forward, we need two core fundamental technologies to be in place. At least that's the point he makes that I think is so interesting. One is the electronic patient record, and the other digital prescriptions or e-prescribing. The two form the backbone of all healthcare ecosystems. The former enables the tracking and sharing of individual patient data, as well as the roadmap for health for each patient. So the key role of the electronic health record is relatively intuitive. But the enabling role of an e-prescription infrastructure is not, at least to me, as intuitive. In many ways, though, it is the yin to the EHR's yang. It is through medication that doctors implement their roadmap for patient health. So when both are digitized, it is kind of much easier for more niche programs that could be complicated, like cross-border care services or multidisciplinary care modules like chronic disease management programs, to be administered and coordinated. So as a point of reference about the importance of pharmacies in both the EU and the US, pharmacy-related costs account for approximately 15 to 20% of overall healthcare expenditures. It's a big deal. Anyhow, very interesting idea that those are the two enabling infrastructure tools on which you can build a digital health ecosystem. All right, let's get back to Tobias and the implementation of technology in the EU and some examples, and also where the opportunities are.
Patient remote monitoring is a category that, of course, has taken off a bit more in the US with the CPT reimbursement codes, whereas in Europe, we mostly have disease-specific reimbursement for patient remote monitoring, which then means that uptake has been much slower. If I take my home country, Germany, as an example, we have a reimbursement code for patient remote monitoring for heart failure, and that's it. And so despite the academic literature having shown that patient remote monitoring has been beneficial in terms of patient outcomes and hospital effectiveness and readmission rates and et cetera, for COPD, diabetes, et cetera, right? There is no reimbursement, only for one indication, right? And other European countries also usually do it by indication instead of a technology-related reimbursement code like we've got in the US. What I'm excited about is that when I look at the German digital health strategy that came out in 2023, is that they want to now create digitally enabled disease management programs in the next couple of years. And I hope that that sort of takes us from a digital health by category approach that we had over the last few years with one program to establish electronic patient records, a different program to establish e-prescriptions, a different program to establish digital therapeutics, a different program to establish a patient remote monitoring, that we get more towards a model where, if I say you would be trying to establish a digitally enabled disease management program for diabetes, right? If I was leader in the health system, right, I wouldn't quite care whether and how much of online appointment booking, video consultations, remote monitoring, digital therapeutics or other stuff you would be using, as long as it's effective. So in that sense, I really hope that we are getting from that notion of let's enable a digital health category like video consultation towards more like let's empower people that they can develop digitally enabled disease management programs for diabetes, back pain, COPD, heart failure, etc. And then they can stitch together whatever they need to get to good patient journeys and workflows that are then sort of helping doctors and healthcare workers spend more time with patients and less time with administration.
Looking from outside, I did not quite realize that this fragmented approach to digital innovation was at the core of Germany's slow progress in the adoption of digital health tools. It is no surprise that if you only provide one reimbursement code for one disease process, it is unlikely that you'll see adoption of an entire category like remote monitoring. Congestive heart failure is a vertical. It's a specific disease and care pathway. Remote patient monitoring sits more on the horizontal scale. It can be applied to any number of verticals. So there are no economies of scale for the horizontal until technology that operates across the entire plane can be leveraged by numerous individual verticals. In other words, a set of devices in a patient's home that are connected through the Internet of Things to a healthcare delivery system is not going to be cost-effective until it manages diabetes, hypertension, peripheral vascular disease, and low back pain, as well as congestive heart failure. So these technologies are, after all, simply data collection tools. The more data they collect, the lower cost per data point to the system. So if you're wondering why the German health minister might only reimburse congestive heart failure treatment, well, the answer is likely to be relatively simple. In the US and elsewhere, congestive heart failure has the best and most compelling data supporting remote patient monitoring, which of course misses the whole point. Tobias says that a broader approach to enable adoption and justify building the entire infrastructure would be to simply reimburse the mechanism, any mechanism that gets the job done. As we will see, elsewhere in the EU, some countries have taken a different approach and focus more, as Tobias puts it, on empowering people to develop digital health journeys for their patients. But let's get back to Tobias's points. They're really good.
So I would say there is this movement at different speeds. There are currently several countries, especially in Eastern Europe, Romania and Poland, as far as I know, who are currently developing that digital health strategy on country level with the ministry. And then there are some countries that are in the middle of implementation, where I would say that's sort of Germany and France, right? And then there are some countries that have been doing digital health for a long time, like Scandinavia, for example, where they are trying to get from good to great. And then I think the other part that has been less in focus that I think will be an important topic is if we compare it with the US, right? Are we enabling somehow in European countries also sort of risk-taking disease management, value-based care models, where then if you, Stefano, say, I've got an amazing solution for where I can manage a population of 25,000 multiple sclerosis patients, then you can manage that population and we then see whether health literacy improves, patient outcomes improve, patient satisfaction is good, and what are the costs for all of that afterwards, right? So that has been an eternal topic in Europe, right? For what digital health category is there a reimbursement code and for what is not, and which needs to be covered by the DRG hospital reimbursement, and then as a digital health company to come up with an efficiency use case for hospitals so that they can justify it with their DRG system, right? So I think there will be and hopefully also a discussion, right? How are we enabling different reimbursement and financing models to then, I guess, ultimately what I personally would be excited about, right? That we enable programs around digitally enabled chronic disease management, then the digitization of acute care with the 15,000 hospitals that Europe has in total is ongoing anyway, which is a big lift. And then finally, we are, of course, also getting to genomics-based precision medicine, but that is only a few countries like the National Genome Center in Denmark or Genomics England currently doing that at national scale. And a lot of other countries are doing that with sort of smaller university-driven initiatives as well.
In essence, after implementing an EMR and digital prescriptions, the three initiatives to drive adoption at scale that Tobias suggests would be one, enabling different reimbursement models that incentivize the use of digital tools. Two, implement programs around chronic disease management. We'll come back to that. And three, the digitization of acute care, meaning the digital transformation of 15,000 hospitals across the EU that he aptly states is a big lift, but it will happen. Fourth, he talks about precision medicine, which is tied to genomics. Now, I find it interesting that Tobias mentioned this latter area. It is a hot topic for sure, and the potential to transform care delivery models is very high. But precision medicine, while it is a ways off in the future, is entirely reliant on massive data collection, followed by machine learning, and then clinical testing before it will have meaningful impacts on health costs. It's a ways out. Now, to go a little digression here in case you're curious, the health cost savings from such programs would come from the idea that we would be able to target treatments specifically tailored to the genetic makeup of an individual. Why that matters is as follows. To give a simple example, some people simply do not have the enzymes to metabolize specific drugs into the bioactive form. So not all drugs, but many drugs are not bioactive, Many drugs are not bioactive in the form they're administered. In other words, they don't work. They need to be metabolized or chemically changed, usually by the liver, into a form that actually acts on the patient's internal receptors. So here's a simple example. If you give a patient codeine, a painkiller that's commonly used, but they lack CYPTDS, which is an enzyme, the body cannot convert the codeine into its active compound, which happens to be morphine. So if a physician knows that the patient cannot metabolize codeine, they might simply prescribe another drug and not waste a bunch of time for the patient and, of course, the cost of the care. There are many far more complex relationships that are being discovered every day, which are more meaningful, but that was a good example. But only a computerized system could track all these crazy, complicated relationships and relate them to the genomic makeup of that individual patient and any other determinants of health, like whether or not the patient smokes, for example, and apply that combination of data points to the individual care pathways for the individual. So I think it's a little bit of a ways off, but of course, without enabling a digital health platform and digital data collection, none of it will ever be possible. Okay, let's get back to the European Union and generalize initiatives at that level, and perhaps even talk about World Health Organization level topics, because this is an area that Tobias is very involved with.
At EU level, there are then a few disease-focused things going on, like the Beating Cancer Plan, which is then about saving lives of European citizens related to cancer, doing initiatives with an aim towards 2030. And then there are a few cross-cutting initiatives like the European Health Data Space, as sort of a more foundational cross-cutting thing that then ideally has benefits beyond different disease areas. And most of the people in Europe in the healthcare scene are currently talking about the European Health Data Space as sort of a way then to enable secondary use of health data and making that available for research and innovation. And of course, then also the primary benefits that citizens then can. I just wish as a European citizen, you know, before we talk about secondary use of health data, we talk about and think about primary benefit for the citizen, right? Because usually if you do those large scale initiatives that don't have a clear and attractive benefit for the citizen, then it often becomes a very much of an uphill battle. You know, the European Health Data Space has this cross-country element, right? And then the question for me as a citizen would be, what are the benefits of all of that for me? Because if we say that the use case for the citizen is that if I got a prescription from my doctor here in Berlin and then I forget to cash it in, and if I then find myself on weekend in the Netherlands, then I realize that I haven't cashed in my diabetes medication and that I then can go to a pharmacy in Rome and get my diabetes medication, I think that can be useful, right? But I'm not sure that that is the use case that is terribly exciting for 500 million European citizens to cash in a prescription from their home country in another country. How many people will have that problem, right? So that's sort of where I'm like, what is sort of the benefits for our health systems and our citizens before we talk about secondary use of health data? Currently, from sort of the European view, the European health data space is the topic that has a lot of focus, and then a few other programs like the Beating Cancer Plan also being pursued. And if I briefly then close by looking at the global level, right there, the WHO has just launched their global initiative for digital health, which is a GIDH, right? And they pronounce it as GUIDE initiative. And they've had a lot of interest from organizations who went to their website to sign up for this initiative and to be part of it. As far as I remember, there are more than 1,000 who signed up, including more than 100 ministries of health across the world. But if then you have a cluster of 25 countries who want to do electronic patient records together, or if we've got a cluster of 37 countries who want to develop digitally enabled disease management programs together and learn from each other what works and what doesn't work, I think that can be very powerful compared with the each country explores it on their own mentality that or experience that we've had in the past. So I really hope that this global digital health transformation initiative under the leadership of the WHO is really not only convening and also assessing what is sort of the demand and the need, but then also enabling to drive the digital transformation. And topics that I think could be very useful is then to think about what could be reference architectures for a digitally enabled health system in the future, right? What could be financing constructs that have worked? What could be, you know, data transparency principles or digital identity topics, right? That if one country has solved them in an elegant way, right? Where another country could say, okay, let's do it like that as well, right? Of course, everything based then on FHIR and interoperability so that you can then also move towards ideally a library or maybe even a marketplace of digital public goods, right? Where you could say, okay, if this is a digital identity management solution that might be even open source and was developed in country X, why not use it in country Y as well?
Super cool vision that the WHO has and articulated by Tobias of a library or even a marketplace of digital public goods that can be leveraged by multiple countries, smaller countries, perhaps developing countries, so that they don't have to reinvent the wheel. And more importantly, so that they are interoperable. Very cool.
And one example also in my home country here in the south of Germany, there is one state that just had similar thinking. In that state, you have 200 hospitals, right? And currently those hospitals, the larger ones have between 200 and 400 pieces of software that they have sort of procured and customized on-premise usually, right? And then the question, and they do cybersecurity 200 times locally and they do IT services 200 times locally, and they do procurement 200 times locally, and they do digitization 200 times locally. There's now been the decision to build a multi-cloud infrastructure in that state to connect those 200 hospitals with each other, and then to do digitization jointly. And topics that are part of that discussion is then indeed identity management, cybersecurity services on the more foundational level, but then on the more digital health level, things like doing teleconsultation software or health data exchange platforms, right, to then sort of connect those hospitals and do that together. But also very mundane things like online joint procurement, right? And if you do that with all of the hospitals involved, right? If you do the process once and the market exploration once and the health data concept once and the cybersecurity concept once instead of 200 hospitals doing it individually, already that is a massive time saving, right? So I think that is sort of done on a state level with 200 hospitals, right? Of course, you could also then do that across a whole country or even across several countries, right? Germany has 1,900 hospitals. Europe as a whole has about 15,000 hospitals. Well, but even if you would say Europe currently needs to digitize 15,000 hospitals, roughly, yes, you can do it all state by state, region by region, county by county. Or you could also say, is there actually something that could be done together, right?
So that would make sense. It is a bit utopian to think that all the, say, the EU countries would forge a common path for all care modules, but it's not really what we're talking about here. And in fact, I'm not actually on board with a unitarian theory that all hospitals should run the same software. But when it comes to core infrastructure and implementing standards like unique patient identifiers, electronic health record interoperability, and maybe even procurement platforms, there's value there. And we've seen elsewhere in this podcast that healthcare is local and that successful platforms need to adopt local workflows to themselves be adopted. And as sometimes those workflows differ from workflows in other contexts and for very good reason. However, that said, standards enable competitive ecosystems to thrive based on a shared understanding of how things work. Once everybody knows, for example, what a plug looks like, and that everyone will use the same plug, business can create products for a market knowing that they can always plug in, thus mitigating risk from, say, choosing one plug over another or not knowing which will be the most adopted. Standards de-risk innovation, and that's what we need in digital health, innovation. and standards. So next, I wanted to ask about what Tobias sees as the overwhelming drivers of innovation that will, over time, whether governments like it or not, lead to digital transformation.
I think one is creating those journeys and workflows that actually help doctors and nurses spend more time with patients instead of more time with administration, right? And in the past, it was often those sort of point solutions. When I give you digital therapeutics plus a workflow software plus a video consultation plus a separate remote monitoring software plus another software to do digital diagnostics and yet another software, right? You will say, how should I stitch all of that together? And I've got so much other stuff to do and I'm not an IT person and I don't want to have 15 different software solutions open when I see a patient. And a lot of the past digitization has been this sort of point solution overload because people were often saying our existing process is a given and now we need software to support the process as it is, right? So I hope that we get to more sort of redesigning also workflows instead of just doing sort of software here and there. I think the other part, and that is the part that I actually have much higher hopes for, is really the way how many European countries are now doing the energy transition. We phased out nuclear energy on the one hand, we are trying to phase out coal on the other hand, and we are trying to increase wind and we are trying to increase solar on the other hand, right? And that means that we are trying to manage something down towards a target date and we are managing something up towards a target date, right? My hope would be that then some of our European countries would start to put just budgets in place that are separate from the current fee-for-service budgets, right? So Germany spends between 300 and 400 billion every year on healthcare. So what if we put in place a value-based care budget for digitally enabled chronic disease management that this year is 1 billion. And then, Stefano, if you've got a great program to locally manage chronic disease patients in a county, then you can apply that this gets funded and then you get evaluated. And after 2 years, we'll see whether it was worth it or whether there is another county program that is better. And then you could say, okay, we spent that billion for a number of programs. And with these programs, we cover a certain amount of people, right? And then next year, we could say, okay, that budget increases by 10% or by 20%, right? And the programs would constantly improve. And then, right, one would design those programs that the different digital solutions stitch together in a coherent way. So I wish we would move into those sort of just setting up a separate budget instead of doing the re-engineering of those massively complicated fee-for-service healthcare systems that we've been having for the last 100 years, right? But if we say, where are we in Europe on digitally enabled prevention, right? I would say pretty much nowhere. Where are we on digitally enabled acute care, right? That is sort of ongoing, but it takes a while to digitize 15,000 hospitals and hundreds of thousands of ambulatory practices and thousands of health insurances, right? And if we say, where are we on digitally enabled chronic disease management, right? There are a few examples here and there, but not at scale. And so if we would say, here is a budget, right, to drive and continuous improve digitally enabled prevention at scale, and here is another budget where we try to improve digitally enabled chronic disease management at scale. And then, of course, we've got our massive fee-for-service budget for acute care that we've always had. I think then we could manage towards better prevention and better chronic disease management, because most of the European health systems, I would say, have been set up for acute care, right? If I get run over a bus, you will be able to stitch me together somehow, right? Of course, that fee-for-service mentality doesn't work so well for prevention and it doesn't work so well for chronic disease management. But what I'm excited about personally is tools helping people with sustainable behavior change on the one hand. That means often then, how can digital tools help me with better sleep, better nutrition, better fitness, better stress management, right? And how can, on the other hand, digital tools help with sort of health workforce shortages that you just mentioned, right? Spending the available resources more effectively on care and not on administration and documentation stuff, which is a significant proportion today.
That is so true. If we could just optimize for administration and documentation, that would cut a great deal of the cost and burden of delivering increasingly resource-intensive healthcare. At any rate, stepping back to look at the 10,000-foot view is important to see what the opportunities are. I recall once hearing a talk by John Chambers, who was then CEO of Cisco. In a Q&A session, he was asked about the most pressing problems he was seeing as he traveled the world as CEO of Cisco. And he stated that every country's president he would speak with would spend half their time asking for solutions for the cost of healthcare in their countries. And this was 15 years ago. The cost of healthcare is a massive drag on economic growth for many countries. At the same time, that demand for increasingly complex services going up and resources to deliver care from doctors to nurses to dollars for the care itself are going down. And the only clear solution is going to be to leverage digital platforms to support the resources we have, right? It's not to necessarily always replace them, but certainly to automate some tasks and to dynamically optimize resource allocations of those limited scarce resources. As Tobias pointed out, the point solution-driven first wave of digitalization was not sustainable, first from an integration perspective and later from a cybersecurity and cost perspective. And Tobias suggests that the next generation of solutions supported by governments and payers are likely going to be ones in which different point solutions are stitched together in a coherent way. I love the way you phrase that. Stitched together in a coherent way. I want to thank Tobias for sitting with us and talking to me about this, taking time from his conferences to meet with me. I wish him the best of luck in his next career. And so glad I had a chance to speak with him and get this information to you. Hope you enjoyed it. Take care. Hey there, this is Stefano again, and I'm excited to share this new podcast. I traveled the world on my sabbatical, and I was meeting healthcare innovators with incredible stories, and I just want to share them. So let's connect. I want to hear your thoughts. DM me on LinkedIn, and I'll reply to every message. And if you like these conversations as much as I did, share the podcast. Give it a like. Your support will help spread these inspiring stories to even more people. Thank you.